Carlos Castaneda's Tales of Power, Part 1, A Witness to Acts of Power, Chapter 1, An Appointment with Knowledge, Part 2. Now, if I can find the page here. I wanted to ask more, but he put his hand on my mouth and hushed me. He then put his mouth next to my ear and whispered that I should listen and try to hear a soft rustling, the gentle muffled steps of a moth on the dry leaves and branches on the ground. I could not hear anything. Don Juan stood up abruptly, picked up the lantern, and said that we were going to sit under the ramada by the front door. He led me through the back and around the house. On the edge of the chaparral, rather than going through the room and out of the front door. He explained that it was essential to make our presence obvious. We half-circled around the house on the left side. Don Juan's pace was extremely slow. His steps were weak and vacillating. His arm shook as he held the lantern. I asked him if there was something wrong with him. He winked at me and whispered that the big moth that was prowling around had an appointment with a young man, and that the slow gait of a feeble old man was an obvious way of showing who was the appointee. When we finally arrived at the front of the house, Don Juan looked at the lantern, hooked the lantern on a beam, and then made me sit with my back against the wall. He sat to my right. "We're going to sit here," he said, "and you are going to write and talk to me in a very normal manner. The moth that lurched at you today is around in the bushes. After a while, it will come closer to look at you. That's why I put a lantern on a beam right above you. The light will guide the moth to find you. But when it gets to the edge of the bushes, it will call you. It is a very special sound. The sound by itself may help you." "What kind of sound is it, Don Juan?" "It is a song. The haunting call that moths produce. Ordinarily it cannot be heard, but the moth out there in the bushes is a rare moth, and you will hear its call clearly, providing that you are impeccable. It will remain with you for the rest of your life." What is it going to help me with? "Tonight, you're going to try to finish what you've started earlier. Seeing happens only when a warrior is capable of stopping the internal dialogue. Today you stopped your talk at will, out there in the bushes, and you saw. What you saw was not clear. You thought it was a man. I say it was a moth. Neither of us is correct, but that's because we have to talk. I still have the upper hand because I see better than you and because I'm familiar with the sorcerer's explanation. So I know, although it's not altogether accurate, that the shape you saw tonight was a moth. And now you're going to remain silent and thoughtless and let that little moth come to you again." I could hardly take notes. Don Juan laughed and urged me to keep on writing as if nothing bothered me. He touched my arm and said that writing was the best protective shield that I had. "We've never talked about moths," he went on. "The time is not right until now. As you already know, your spirit is unbalanced. To counteract that, I taught you to live the warrior's way. Well, the warrior starts off with the certainty that his spirit is off balance. Then, by living in full control and awareness, but without hurry or compulsion, he does his ultimate best to gain this balance. In your case, as in the case of every man, your imbalance was due to the sum total of all your actions. But now your spirit seems to be in the proper light to talk about moths." "How do you know that this was the right time to talk about moths? I caught a glimpse of the moth prowling around when you arrived. It was the first time it was friendly and open. I had seen it before in the mountains around Gennaro's house, but only as a menacing figure reflecting your lack of order. I heard a strange sound at that moment. It was like a muffled creaking of a branch rubbing against another, or like the sputtering of a small motor heard from a distance. It changed scales like a musical tone, creating an eerie rhythm. Then it stopped. "That was the moth," Don Juan said. "Perhaps you've already noticed that. Although the light of the lantern is bright enough to attract moths, there isn't a single one flying around it." I had not paid attention to it, but once Don Juan made me aware of it, I also noticed an incredible silence in the desert around the house. "Don't get jumpy," he said calmly. "There is nothing in this world that a warrior cannot account for. You see, a warrior considers himself already dead, so there is nothing for him to lose. The worst has already happened to him. Therefore, he's clear and calm. Judging him by his acts or his words, one would never suspect that he has witnessed everything." Don Juan's words, and above all his mood, were very soothing to me. I told him that in my day-to-day life I no longer experienced the obsessive fear I used to, but that my body entered into convulsions of fright at the thought of what was out there in the dark. "Out there is only knowledge," he said in a factual tone. "Knowledge is frightening, true. But if a warrior accepts the frightening nature of knowledge, he cancels out its awesomeness." The strange sputtering noise happened again. It seemed closer and closer. I listened carefully. The more attention I paid to it, the more difficult it was to determine its nature. It did not seem to be the call of a bird or the cry of a land animal. The tone of each sputter was rich and deep. Some were produced in a low key, others in a high one. They had a rhythm and a specific duration. Some were long, I heard them like a single unit of sound. Others were short and happened in a cluster, like the staccato sound of a machine gun. "The moths are the heralds, or better yet, the guardians of eternity," Don Juan said after the sound had stopped. "For some reason, or for no reason at all, they are the depositories of the gold dust of eternity." The metaphor was foreign to me. I asked him to explain. "The moths carry a dust on their wings," he said, "a dark gold dust. That dust is the dust of knowledge." His explanation made the metaphor even more obscure. I vacillated for a moment, trying to find the best way of wording my question, but he began to talk again. "Knowledge is a most peculiar affair," he said, "especially for a warrior. Knowledge for a warrior is something that comes at once, engulfs him, and passes on." "What does knowledge have to do with the dust on the wings of moths?" I asked after a long pause. "Knowledge comes floating like specks of dust, the same dust that covers the wings of moths. So for a warrior, knowledge is like taking a shower or being rained on by specks of dark gold dust." In the most polite manner I was capable of, I mentioned that his explanations had confused me even more. He laughed and assured me that he was making perfect sense, except that my reason would not allow me to be at ease. "The moths have been the intimate friends and helpers of sorcerers from time immemorial," he said. "I had not touched upon this subject before because of your lack of preparation. But how can the dust on their wings be knowledge? You'll see." He put his hand over my notebook and told me to close my eyes and become silent without thoughts. He said that the call of the moth in the chaparral was going to aid me. If I paid attention to it, it would tell me of imminent events. He stressed that he did not know how the communication between the moth and myself was going to be established. Neither did he know what the terms of the communication would be. He urged me to feel at ease and confident and trust my personal power. After an initial period of impatience and nervousness, I succeeded in becoming silent. My thoughts diminished in number until my mind was perfectly blank. The noises of the desert chaparral seemed to have been turned on as I became more calm. The strange sound that Don Juan said was made by a moth occurred again. It registers as a feeling in my body, not as a thought in my mind. It occurred to me that it was not threatening or malevolent at all. It was sweet and simple. It was like a child's call. It brought back the memory of a little boy I had once knew. The long sounds reminded me of his round blonde head, the short staccato sounds of his laughter. The most anguishing feeling oppressed me, and yet there were no thoughts in my mind. I felt the anguish in my body. I could no longer remain sitting and slid to the floor on my side. My sadness was so intense that I began to think. I assessed my pain and sorrow, and suddenly I found myself in the midst of an internal debate about the little boy. The sputtering sound had ceased. My eyes were closed. I heard Don Juan standing up, then I felt him helping me to sit up. I did not want to speak. He did not say a word. I heard him moving by me. I opened my eyes. He had knelt in front of me and was examining my face, holding the lantern close to me. He ordered me to put my hands over my stomach. And he stood up and went to the kitchen and brought me some water. What, whatever, did I miss a page here? Yeah, I think I did. No. He stood up, went to the kitchen and brought me some water. He splashed some on my face and gave me the rest to drink. He sat down next to me and handed me my notes. I told him that the sound had involved me in the most painful reverie. "You're indulging beyond your limits," he said dryly. He seemed to immerse himself in thought, as if he was searching for an appropriate suggestion to make. "The problem for tonight is seeing people," he finally said. "First, you must stop your internal dialogue. Then you must bring up the image of the person that you want to see. Any thought that one holds in mind in a state of silence is properly a command. Since there are no other thoughts to compete with it, tonight the moth in the bushes wants to help you, so it will sing for you. Its song will bring the golden specks, and then you will see the person that you selected." I wanted to have more details, but he made me up. He made an abrupt gesture and signaled me to proceed. After struggling for a few minutes to stop my internal dialogue, I was thoroughly silent. And then I deliberately held the brief thought of a friend of mine. I kept my eyes closed for what I believe was just an instant, and then I became aware of someone was shaking me by the shoulders. It was a slow realization. I opened my eyes and found myself lying on my left side. I had apparently fallen asleep so deeply that I did not remember having slumped to the ground. Don Juan helped me sit up again. He was laughing. He imitated my snoring and said that if he had not witnessed it himself, he would not believe that anyone could fall asleep so fast. He said that it was a treat for him to be around me whenever I had to do something that my reason did not understand. He pushed my notebook away from me and said that we had to start all over. I followed the necessary steps. The strange sputtering sound happened again. This time, however, it did not come from the chaparral. Rather, it seemed to happen inside of me, as if my lips or legs or arms were producing it. The sound soon engulfed me. I felt like soft balls were being sputtered out from or against me. It was a soothing, exquisite feeling of being bombarded by heavy cotton puffs. Suddenly, I heard a door blown open by a gust of wind, and I was thinking again. I thought that I had ruined another chance. I opened my eyes and found myself in my room. The objects on my desk were as I had left them. The door was open, and there was a strong wind outside. The thought crossed my mind that I should check the water heater. I then heard a rattling on the sliding windows that I had put up myself, which did not fit well on the window frame. It was a furious rattling, as if someone wanted to enter. I experienced a jolt of fright. I stood up from my chair, and I felt something pulling me. I screamed. Don Juan was shaking me by my shoulders. I excitedly gave him the account of my vision. It had been so vivid that I was shivering. I felt that I had been at my desk in my full corporeal form. Don Juan shook his head in disbelief and said that I was a genius in tricking myself. He did not seem impressed by what I had done. He discarded it flatly and ordered me to start again. I then heard the mysterious sound again. It came to me, as Don Juan had suggested, in the form of a rain of golden specks. I did not feel that they were flat specks or flakes, as he had described them, but rather spherical bubbles. They floated towards me. One of them burst open and revealed the scene to me. It was as if it had stopped in front of my eyes and opened up, disclosing a strange object. It looked like a mushroom. I was definitely looking at it, and what I was experiencing was not a dream. The mushroom-like object remained unchanged within my field of vision, and then it popped, as I thought the light that was shining on it had been turned off. An interminable darkness followed it. I felt a tremor, a very unsettling jolt, and then I had the abrupt realization that I was being shaken. All at once, my senses were turned on. Don Juan was shaking me vigorously, and I was looking at him. I must have just opened my eyes at that moment. He sprinkled water on my face. The coldness of the water was very appealing. After a moment's pause, he wanted to know what had happened. I recounted every detail of my vision. "But what did I see?" I asked. "Your friend," he retorted. I laughed and patiently explained that I had seen a mushroom-like figure, although I had no criteria to judge dimensions. Excuse me. I had had the feeling that it was just about a foot long. Don Juan emphasized that the feeling was all that counted. He said that my feelings were the gauge that assessed the state of being of the subject I was seeing. "From your description and your feelings, I must conclude that your friend must be a very fine man," he said. I was baffled by his words. He said that the mushroom-like formation was the essential shape of human beings when a sorcerer was seeing them from far away. But when a sorcerer was directly facing the person he was seeing, the human quality was shown as an egg-like cluster of luminous fibers. "You were not facing your friend," he said. "Therefore, he appeared like a mushroom." "Why is that so, Don Juan?" "No one knows. That simply is the way men appear in this specific type of seeing." He added that every feature of the mushroom-like formation had a special significance, and that it was impossible for a beginner to accurately interpret that significance. I then had an intriguing recollection. Some years before, in a state of non-ordinary reality elicited by the intake of psychotropic plants, I had experienced or perceived while I was looking at a water stream that a cluster of bubbles floated toward me, engulfing me. The golden bubbles I had just envisioned had floated and engulfed me in exactly the same manner. In fact, I could say that both clusters had been the same structure and the same pattern. Don Juan listened to my commentaries without interest. "Don't waste your power on trifles," he said. "You are dealing with the immensity out there." He pointed towards the chaparral with a movement of his hand. "To turn that magnificence out there into reasonableness doesn't do anything for you. Here, surrounding us, is eternity itself. To engage in reducing it to a manageable nonsense is petty and outright disastrous." He then insisted that I could attempt to see another person from my realm of acquaintances. He added that once the vision had terminated, I should strive to open my eyes by myself and surface the full awareness of my immediate surroundings. I succeeded in holding the view of another mushroom-like form. But while the first one had been yellowish and small, the second one was whitish, larger, and contorted. By the time we had finished talking about the two shapes I had seen, I had forgotten that the moth in the bushes which had been so overwhelming a little while before. I had forgot about them. I told Don Juan that it amazed me that I had such a facility for discarding something so truly uncanny. It was as if I were not the person I knew myself to be. "I don't see why you make such a fuss out of this," Don Juan said. "Whenever the dialogue stops, the world collapses, and the extraordinary facets of ourselves surface, as though they had been kept heavily guarded over our words. You are like you are, because you tell yourself that you are that way." After a short rest, Don Juan urged me to continue calling friends. He said that the point was to attempt to see as many times as possible in order to establish a guideline for feeling. I called 32 persons in succession. After each attempt, he demanded a careful and detailed rendition of everything I had perceived in my vision. He changed that procedure, however, as I became more proficient in my performance, judging by my stopping the internal dialogue in a matter of seconds, by my being capable of opening my eyes by myself at the end of each experience, and by my resuming ordinary activities without any transition. I noticed that this change while we were discussing the coloration of the mushroom-like formations. He had already made the point that what I called coloration was not a hue, but a glow of a different intensities. I was about to describe a yellowish glow that I had envisioned when he interrupted me and accurately described what I had seen. From that point on, he discussed the content of each vision, not as if he had understood what I had said, but as if he had seen it himself. When I called him to comment on it, he flatly refused to talk about it. By the time I had finished calling 32 persons, I had realized that I had seen a variety of mushroom-like shapes and glows, and I had had a variety of feelings toward them, ranging from mild delight to sheer disgust. Don Juan explained that men were filled with configurations that could be wishes, problems, sorrows, worries, and so on. He asserted that only a profoundly powerful sorcerer could untangle the meaning of those configurations, and that I had to be content with viewing only the general shape of men. I was very tired. There was something indeed fatiguing about those strange shapes. My overall sensation was one of queasiness. I had not liked them. They had made me feel trapped and doomed. Don Juan commanded me to write in order to dispel the sensation of somberness. And after a long silent interview during which I could not write anything, he asked me to call on people that he himself would select. A new series of forms emerged. They were not mushroom-like, but more like Japanese cups of sake turned upside down. Some of them had a head-like formation, just like the foot of sake cups. Others were more round. Their shapes were appealing and peaceful. I sensed that there was some inherent feeling of happiness about them. They bounced as opposed to being earthbound heaviness that the previous batch had exhibited. Somehow, the mere fact that they were there eased my fatigue. Among the persons he had selected was his apprentice, Eligio. When I summoned the vision of Eligio, I got a jolt that shook me out of my visionary state. Eligio had a long white shape that jerked and seemed to leap at me. Don Juan explained that Eligio was a very talented apprentice and that he, no doubt, had noticed that someone was seeing him. Another of Don Juan's selections was Pablito, Don Gennaro's apprentice. The jolt that the vision of Pablito gave me was even greater than Eligio's. Don Juan laughed so hard that tears rolled down his cheeks. "Why are those people shaped differently?" I asked. "They have more personal power," he replied. "As you might have noticed, they are not pegged down to the ground. What has given them that lightness? Were they born that way?" "We are all born that light and bounty, but we become earthbound and fixed. We make ourselves that way. So perhaps we may say that these people are shaped differently because they live like warriors. But that's not important, though. What's of value is that you are at the edge now. You've called 47 people, and there is only one more left in order for you to complete the original 48. I remembered at that moment that years before he had told me, while discussing corn sorcery and divination, that the number of corn kernels that a sorcerer possessed was 48. He had never explained why. I asked him again, why 48? 48 is our number, he said. That's what makes us men. I don't know why. Don't waste your power in idiotic questions. He stood up and scratched his arms and legs. He told me to do the same. I noticed that there was a tinge of light in the sky towards the east. We sat down again. He leaned over and put his mouth to my ear. The last person you're going to call is Gennaro, the real McCoy, he whispered. I felt a strange curiosity and excitation. I breezed through the required steps. The strange sound from the edge of the chaparral became vivid and acquired a new strength. I had almost forgotten about it. The golden bubbles engulfed me. Then in one of them, I saw Don Gennaro himself. He was standing in front of me, holding his hat in his hand. He was smiling. I hurriedly opened my eyes and was about to speak to Don Juan, but before I could say a word, my body stiffened like a board. My hair stood on end, and for a long moment, I didn't know what to do or say. Don Gennaro was standing right in front of me, in person. I turned to Don Juan. He was smiling. Then both of them broke into a giant laugh. I also tried to laugh. I could not. I stood up. Don Juan handed me a cup of water. I drank it automatically. I thought he was going to sprinkle water on my face. Instead, he refilled my cup. Don Gennaro scratched his head and hid a grin. Aren't you going to greet Gennaro? Don Juan asked. It took an enormous effort for me to organize my thoughts and my feelings. And finally, I mumbled some greeting to Don Gennaro. He took a bow. You called me, didn't you? He asked, smiling. I muttered my amazement at having found him standing there. He did call you, Don Juan interjected. Well, here I am, Don Gennaro said. What can I do for you? Slowly, my mind seemed to become organized, and finally, I had a sudden insight. My thoughts were crystal clear, and I knew that what had taken place. I figured that Don Gennaro had been visiting with Don Juan, and that as soon as he had heard my car approach, Don Gennaro had slipped into the bushes and had remained in hiding until it got dark. I believe the evidence was convincing. Don Juan, since he had no doubt engineered the entire affair, gave me clues from time to time, thus guiding its development. At the appropriate time, when Don Gennaro had made me notice his presence, when Don Juan and I were walking back to the house, he followed us in the most obvious manner in order to arouse my fear. Then he had waited in the chaparral and made a strange sound whenever Don Juan had signaled him. The final signal to come out from behind the bushes must have been given by Don Juan while my eyes were closed after he had asked me to call Don Gennaro. Then Don Gennaro must have walked to the Ramada and waited until I opened my eyes and then scared me out of my wits. The only incongruities in my logical explanation scheme were that I had actually seen the man hiding in the bushes turn into a bird, and that I had had the first visualized Don Gennaro as an image in a golden bubble. In my vision, he had been dressed exactly as he was in person, since there was no logical way for him to explain those incongruities. I assume, as I have always done in similar circumstances, that the emotional stress may have played an important role in determining what I believed I saw. I began to laugh quite involuntarily at the thought of their preposterous trick. I told them about my deductions. They laughed uproariously. I honestly believe that their laughter was their giveaway. You were hiding in the bushes, weren't you? I asked Don Gennaro. Don Juan sat down and held his head in both hands. No, I wasn't hiding, Don Gennaro said patiently. I was far from here, and then you called, so I came to see you. Where were you, Don Gennaro?
Far away.
How far? Don Juan interrupted me and said that Don Gennaro had showed up as an act of deference to me, and that I could not ask where he had been because he had been nowhere. Don Gennaro came to my defense and said that it was all right to ask him anything. If you were not hiding around the house, where were you, Don Gennaro?
I was at my house, he said with great candor.
In central Mexico?
Yes. It's the only house I've got.
They looked at each other and again broke into laughter. I knew that they were kidding me, but I decided not to contest the point any further. I thought they must have had a reason for engaging themselves in such an elaborate production. I sat down. I felt that I was truthfully cut in two. Some part of me was not shocked at all and could accept any of Don Juan or Don Gennaro's acts at their face value. But there was another part of me that flatly refused. It was my strongest part. My conscious assessment was that I had accepted Don Juan's sorcery description of the world merely on an intellectual basis, while my body as a whole entity refused it, thus my dilemma. But then, over the course of the years of my association with Don Juan and Don Gennaro, I had experienced extraordinary phenomena, and those had been bodily experiences, not intellectual ones. Earlier that very night, I had executed the Gate of Power, which, from the point of view of my intellect, was an inconceivable accomplishment. And best of all, I had had incredible visions through no other means than my own volition. I explained to them the nature of my painful and at the same time bona fide perplexity. This guy is a genius, Don Juan, said the Don Gennaro, shaking his head in disbelief. You are a genius, Carlito, Don Gennaro said, as if he were relaying a message. They sat down on either side of me, Don Juan to my right and Don Gennaro to my left. Don Gennaro observed that soon it was going to be morning, and at that instant, again, I heard the moth call. I had been moved. The sound was coming from the opposite direction. I looked at both of them, holding their gaze. My logical scheme began to disintegrate. The sound had a mesmerizing richness and depth. Then I heard muffled steps, soft feet crushing the dry underbrush. The sputtering sound came closer, and I huddled against Don Juan. He dryly ordered me to see it. I made a supreme effort, not so much to please him as to please myself. I had been sure that Don Gennaro was the moth, but Don Gennaro was sitting with me. What, then, was in the bushes? A moth? The sputtering sound echoed in my ears. I could not stop my internal dialogue altogether. I heard the sound, but I could not feel it in my body as I had done earlier. I heard definite steps. Something was creeping in the dark. There was a loud cracking noise, as if a branch had been snapped in two, and suddenly a terrifying memory seized me. Years before, I had spent a dreadful night in the wilderness and had been harassed by something very light and soft that had stepped on my neck over and over while I crouched on the ground. Don Juan had explained that the event was an encounter with the Ally, a mysterious force that a sorcerer learned to perceive as an entity. I leaned closer to Don Juan and whispered what I had remembered. Don Gennaro crawled on all fours to get closer to us. What did he say? He asked Don Juan in a whisper. He said that there is an ally out there, Don Juan replied in a low voice. Don Gennaro crawled back and sat down. Then he turned to me and said in a loud whisper, "You're a genius." They laughed quietly. Don Gennaro pointed towards the chaparral with a movement of his chin. Go out there and grab it, he said. Take off your clothes and scare the devil out of that ally. They shook with laughter. The sound, in the meantime, had ceased. Don Juan ordered me to stop my thoughts, but to keep my eyes open, focused on the edge of the chaparral in front of me. He said
that the moth had changed physicians because Don Gennaro was there, and that if it were going to manifest itself to me, it would choose to come from the front. After a moment's struggle to quiet my thoughts, I perceived the sound again. It was richer than ever. I heard first the muffled steps on dry twigs, and then I felt them on my body. At that instant, I distinguished a dark mass directly in front of me at the edge of the chaparral. I felt I was being shaken. I opened my eyes. Don Juan and Don Gennaro were standing above me, and I was kneeling, as if I had fallen asleep in a crouching position. Don Juan gave me some water, and I sat down with my back against the wall. A short while later, it was dawn. The chaparral seemed to wake up. The morning cold was crisp and invigorating. The moth had not been Don Gennaro. My rational structure was falling apart. I did not want to ask any more questions, nor did I want to remain quiet. I finally had to talk. "But if you were in Central Mexico, Don Gennaro, how did you get here?" I asked. Don Gennaro made some ludicrous, utterly hilarious gestures with his mouth. "I'm sorry," he said to me. "My mouth doesn't want to talk." He then turned to Don Juan and said, grinning, "Why don't you tell him?" Don Juan facilitated. Then he said that Don Gennaro, as a consummate artist of sorcery, was capable of prodigious deeds. Don Gennaro's chest swelled as if Don Juan's words were inflating him. He seemed to have inhaled so much air that his chest looked twice its normal size. He appeared to be on the verge of floating. He leaped in the air, and I had the impression that the air inside of his lungs had forced him to jump. He paced back and forth on the dirt floor until he apparently got his chest under control. He patted it with great force and ran the palms of his hands from his pectoral muscles to his stomach as if he were deflating the inner tube of a tire. Finally, he sat down. Don Juan was grinning. His eyes were shining with sheer delight. "Write your notes," he ordered me softly. Write, or you'll die." Then he remarked that even Don Gennaro no longer felt that my taking notes was outlandish. "That's right," Don Gennaro retorted. "I've been thinking of taking up writing myself." "Gennaro is a man of knowledge," Don Juan said dryly. "And being a man of knowledge, he's perfectly capable of transporting himself over great distances. He reminded me that once, years before, the three of us had been in the mountains, and that Don Gennaro, in an effort to help me overcome my stupid reason, had taken a prodigious leap to the peaks of the Sierras, 10 miles away. I remembered the event, but I also remembered that I could not even conceive that he had jumped. Don Juan added that Don Gennaro was capable of performing extraordinary feats at certain times. "Gennaro at certain times is not Gennaro, but is double," he said. He repeated it 3 or 4 times. Then both of them watched me as if waiting for my impending reaction. I had not understood what he meant by his double. He had never mentioned that before. I asked for a clarification. "There is another Gennaro," he explained. All three of us looked at one another. I became very apprehensive. Don Juan urged me with a movement of his eyes to keep on talking. "Do you have a twin brother?" I asked, turning to Don Gennaro. "Of course," he said, "I have a twin." I could not determine whether or not they were putting me on. They both giggled with the abandon of children that were pulling a prank. "You may say," Don Gennaro went on, "that at this moment, Gennaro is his twin." That statement brought both of them to the ground with laughter. I could not enjoy their mirth. My body shivered involuntarily. Don Juan said in a severe tone that I was too heavy and too self-important. "Let go," he commanded me dryly. "You know that Gennaro is a sorcerer and an impeccable warrior, so he's capable of performing deeds that would be unthinkable for the average man. His double, the other Gennaro, is one of those deeds." I was speechless. I could not conceive that they were just teasing me. For a warrior like Gennaro, he went on, to produce the other is not a far-fetched enterprise. After pondering for a long time what to say next, I asked, is the other like the self? The other is the self, Don Juan replied. His explanation had taken an incredible turn, and it was not really more incredible than anything else they did. What's the other made of? I asked Don Juan after minutes of indecision. There is no way of knowing that, he said. Is it real or is it just an illusion? It's real, of course. Why would it be possible then to say that it is made of flesh or blood? Would it be possible to say it was made of flesh or blood? I asked. No, I would think, I would not be, no, it would not be possible, Gennaro answered. If it is as real as, but if, is it, is it, but is it as real as I am? As real as you are, Don Juan and Don Gennaro interjected in unison. They looked at each other and laughed until I thought they were going to get ill. Don Gennaro threw his hat on the floor and danced around it. His dance was agile and graceful, and for some inexplicable reason, utterly funny. Perhaps the humor was in exquisitely professional movements. The humor was in the exquisitely professional movements he executed. The incongruity was so subtle that at the same time so remarkable that I doubled up with laughter. The trouble with you, Carlitos, he said as he sat down again, is that you are a genius. I have to know about the double, I said. There's no way of knowing whether he's flesh and blood, Don Juan said, because he is not as real as you. Gennaro's double is as real as Gennaro. Do you see what I mean? But you have to admit, Don Juan, there must be a way to know. The double is the self. That explanation should suffice. If you would see, however, you would know that there is a great difference between Gennaro and his double. For a sorcerer who sees, the double is brighter. I felt I was too weak to ask any more questions. I put my writing pad down for a moment. I thought I was going to pass out. I had tunnel vision. Everything around me was dark, with the exception of a round spot of clear scenery in front of my eyes. Don Juan said that I had to get some food. I was not hungry. Don Gennaro announced that he was famished, stood up and went to the back of the house. Don Gennaro stood up and signaled me to follow Don Juan. In the kitchen, Don Gennaro gave himself a serving of food and then became involved in the most comical mimicking of a person who wants to eat but can't swallow. I thought that Don Juan was going to die. He roared, kicked, cried, coughed, and choked with laughter. I thought I, too, was going to split my sides. Don Gennaro's antics were priceless. He finally gave up and looked at Don Juan and me in succession. He had shiny eyes and a beaming smile. It doesn't work, he said, shrugging his shoulders. I ate a huge amount of food, and so did Don Juan. Then all of us returned to the front of the house. The sunlight was brilliant. The sky was clear, and the morning breeze sharpened the air. I felt happy and strong. We are in a triangle facing one another. After a polite silence, I decided to ask them to clarify my dilemma. I felt that I was again in top form and wanted to exploit my strength. Tell me more about the double, Don Juan, I said. Don Juan pointed at Don Gennaro, and Don Gennaro bowed. There he is, Don Juan said. There is nothing to tell. He's here for you to witness him. But he's Don Gennaro, I said in a feeble attempt to guide the conversation. Surely I'm Don Gennaro, he said, and perked his shoulders. What is a double then, Don Gennaro, I asked. Ask him, he snapped and pointed to Don Juan. He's the one who talks. I'm dumb. A double is the sorcerer himself, developed through his dreaming, Don Juan explained. A double is an act of power to a sorcerer, but only a tale of power to you. In the case of Gennaro, His double is indistinguishable from the original. That's because of his impeccability as a warrior is supreme. Thus, you've never noticed the difference yourself. But in the years that you've known him, you've been with the original Gennaro only twice. Every other time, you've been with his double. But that is preposterous, I explained. I felt an anxiety building up in my chest. I became so agitated that I dropped my writing pad and my pencil rolled out of sight. Don Juan and Don Gennaro practically dove to the ground and began the most farcical search for it. I had never seen a more astonishing performance of theatrical magic and sleight of hand, except that there was no stage, no props, or any type of gadgetry. The most likely performers were not using sleight of hand. Don Gennaro, the head magician, and his assistant Don Juan produced in a number of minutes the most astounding, bizarre, and outlandish collection of objects which they found underneath or behind or above every object within the periphery of the Ramada. In the style of stage magic, the assistant set up the props, which in this case were a few items on the dirt floor, rocks, burlap sacks, pieces of wood, a milk crate, a lantern, and my jacket. Then the magician, Don Gennaro, would proceed to find an object, which he would throw away as soon as he had attested that it was not my pencil. The collection of objects found included pieces of clothing, wigs, eyeglasses, toys, utensils, pieces of machinery, women's underwear, human teeth, sandwiches, and religious objects. One of them was outright disgusting. It was a piece of compact human excrement that Don Gennaro had took from underneath my jacket. Finally, Don Gennaro found my pencil and handed it to me after dusting it off with the tail of his shirt. They celebrated their clowning with yells and chuckles. I found myself watching, unable to join in. "Don't take things so seriously, Carlitos," Don Gennaro said with a tone of concern. "Otherwise, you're going to bust the..." He made a ludicrous gesture that could have meant anything. After their laughter subsided, I asked Don Gennaro what a double did, or what a sorcerer did with a double. Don Gennaro answered. He said that the double had power, and that it was used to accomplish feats that would be unimaginable under ordinary terms. "I've told you time and time again that the world is unfathomable. I almost got it. And so are we, and so is everything that exists in this world. It is impossible, therefore, to reason out the double. You've been allowed to witness it, though, and that should be more than enough." "But there must be a way to talk about it," I said. "You yourself have told me that you explained your conversations with the deer in order to talk about it. Can't you do the same with the double?" He was quiet for a moment, and I pleaded with him. The anxiety I was experiencing was beyond anything I had ever gone through. "Well, a sorcerer can double up," Don Juan said. "That's all one can say. But is he aware that he is a double?" "Of course he is aware of it. But does he know that he is in two places at once?" Both of them looked at me, then exchanged a glance. "Where is the other Don Gennaro?" I asked. Don Gennaro leaned towards me and stared at me and stared into my eyes. "I don't know," he said softly. "No sorcerer knows where his other is." "Gennaro's right," Don Juan said on. "A sorcerer has no notion that he is in two places at once. To be aware of that would be the equivalent of facing his double. And the sorcerer that finds himself face to face with his double is a dead sorcerer. That is the rule. That is the way power has set things up. No one knows why." Don Juan explained that by the time a warrior had conquered dreaming and seeing and had developed the double, he must have also succeeded in erasing personal history, self-importance, and routineness. He said that all the techniques which he had taught me and which I had considered to be empty talk were in essence means for removing the impracticality of having a double in the ordinary world by making the self and the world fluid by placing them outside the bounds of prediction. A fluid warrior can no longer make the world chronological, Bonwan explained. And for him, the world and himself are no longer objects. He is a luminous being existing in a luminous world. The double is a simple affair for a sorcerer because he knows what he's doing. He takes notes. To take notes is a simple affair for you. But you still care. I'm starting to lose here. But you still scare Gennaro with your pencil. Can an outsider look at a sorcerer? See that he is in two places at once, I asked Don Juan. Certainly, that would be the only way to know it. But can't one logically assume that the sorcerer would also notice that he has been in two places? Ah, Don Juan exclaimed. Well, once you've got it right. A sorcerer may certainly notice afterwards that he has been in two places at once. But this is only bookkeeping, and it has no bearing on the fact that while he was acting, he has no notion of his duality. My mind boggled. I felt that if I did not keep writing, I would explode. Think of this, he went on. The world doesn't yield to us directly. The description of the world stands in between. So properly speaking, we are always one step removed from our experience of the world, is always a recollection of that experience. We are perennially recollecting the instant that just happened, just passed. We recollect, recollect, recollect. He turned his hand over and over to give me the feeling of what he meant. If our entire experience of the world is a recollection, then it is not so outlandish to conclude that a sorcerer can be in two places at once. This is not the case from the point of view of his own perception, because in order to experience the world, a sorcerer, like everyone else, like every other man, has to recollect the act he has just performed, the event he has just witnessed, the experience he has just lived. In his awareness, there is only a single recollection. But for an outsider looking at the sorcerer, it may appear as if the sorcerer is acting two different episodes at once. The sorcerer, however, recollects two separate single instants because the glue of the description of time is no longer binding him. When Don Juan had finished talking, I was sure I was running a temperature. Don Gennaro examined me with curious eyes. He's right, he said. You're always one jump behind. He moved his hand as Don Juan had done. His body started to jerk, and he jumped back on his seat. It was as if he had the hiccups, and the hiccups were forcing his body to jump back. He began to move backwards, jumping on his seat, and went all the way to the end of the Ramada and back. The sight of John Gennaro leaping backwards on his buttocks, instead of being funny as it should have been, threw me into an attack of fear so intense that Don Juan had to strike me repeatedly on the top of my head with his knuckles. I just can't grasp all of this, Don Juan, I said. I can't either, Don Juan retorted, shrugging his shoulders. Neither can I, dear Carlitos, Don Gennaro added. My fatigue, the bulk of my sensory experience, the mood of lightness and the humor that prevailed, and Don Gennaro's clowning were too much for my nerves. I could not stop the agitation in my stomach muscles. Don Juan made me roll on the ground until I had regained my calmness. Then I sat down facing them again. Is the double solid? I asked Don Juan after a long silence. They looked at me. Does the double have corporealness? you know, is it a body? I asked, Don Juan said, solidity, corporealness are memories. Therefore, like everything else we feed about the world, there are memories we accumulate. They are memories we accumulate. Memories of the description. You have the memory of my solidity, the same way you have the memory of communicating the words. Thus you talked with a coyote, and you feel me as being solid. Don Juan put his shoulder next to mine and nudged me lightly. Touch me, he said. I patted him, then I embraced him. I was close to tears. Don Gennaro stood up and came closer to me. He looked like a small child with a shiny, mischievous eyes. He puckered up his lips and looked at me for a long moment. What about me? He asked, trying to hide a smile. Aren't you going to embrace me too? I stood up and extended my arms to touch him. My body seemed to freeze on the spot. I had no power to move. I tried to force my arms to reach him, but my struggle was in vain. Don Juan and Don Gennaro stood up. Watching me, I felt my body contorting under an unknown pressure. Don Gennaro sat down and pretended to sulk because I had not embraced him. He pouted and hit the ground with his heels. Then both of them exploded into more roaring laughter. The muscles of my stomach trembled, making my whole body shake. Don Juan pointed out that I was moving my head the way he had recommended earlier, and that was the chance to soothe myself by reflecting a beam of light on the corona of my eyes, of my eyes. I don't know why I can't say that word. He forcibly dragged me from under the roof of his Ramada to the open field and manipulated my body into position so that my eyes would catch the eastern sunlight. But by the time he had put my body in place, I had stopped shivering. I noticed that I was clutching my notebook only after Don Gennaro had said that the weight of the sheets was giving me the shivers. I told Don Juan that my body was pulling me to leave. I waved my hand to Don Gennaro. I did not want to give them time to make me change my mind. Goodbye, Don Gennaro yelled. I have to go now. He waved back at me. Don Juan walked a few yards with me towards my car. Do you also have a double, Don Juan? I asked. Of course, he explained. I had at that moment a maddening thought. I wanted to discard it and leave in a hurry, but something in myself kept on needling me. Over the course of years of our association, it had become customary for me that every time I wanted to see Don Juan, I would just go to Sonora or Central Mexico, and I would always find him waiting for me. I learned to take that for granted. It had never occurred to me until then to think anything of it. Tell me something, Don Juan, I said, half in jest. Are you yourself or are you your double? He leaned over towards me and he said, grinning. My double, he whispered. My body leapt in the air as if I had been propelled by a formidable force. I ran to my car. I was just kidding, Don Juan said in a loud voice. You can't go yet. You still owe me 5 more days. Both of them ran towards my car as I was backing up. They were laughing and jumping up and down. Carlitos, call me anytime, Don Gennaro shouted. End of chapter 1.